Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The United States Supreme Court this week dealt a serious blow to the opponents of the death penalty. In a 5-4 ruling on Glossop v. Gross, justices determined that the lethal injection drug, midazolam, can be continued to be used in conducting executions. And if it is not available, another drug will have to be substituted. Just over a year ago, the state of Oklahoma executed death row inmate Clayton Lockett in a horrific 45-minute-long procedure with the use of a three-drug cocktail that included midazolam. Death penalty opponents argued that the ordeal amounted to cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the U.S. Constitution. But Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito was not having it. Writing the opinion for the majority, Justice Alito said, quote, "Because it is settled that capital punishment is constitutional, it necessarily follows that there must be a constitutional means of carrying it out. And because some risk of pain is inherent in any method of execution, we have held that the Constitution does not require the avoidance of all risk of pain." After all, while most humans wish to die a painless death, many do not have that good fortune. End of quote. That was Justice Samuel Alito writing that. The ruling potentially sets back decades of anti-death penalty activism. Joining me now on the phone to discuss how deep the damage runs is Mike Farrell, well-known actor who rose to stardom in the classic TV series MASH as Captain B.J. Honeycutt. He's a longtime political activist who worked in Central America in the 1980s, aiding refugees. He was for many years the co-chair of the California chapter of Human Rights Watch. He's also the president of the California-based Death Penalty Focus. His autobiography is titled Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Hello, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. We were looking forward to having you in studio, but we will make do on the phone.
I am so sorry about the confusion. I have my suddenly had my grandson with me last night, and I had to prepare him for school.
No problem. We understand you're very, very busy. Well, how do you understand this ruling? This is a very, very important ruling. Justice Alito basically said that since we have the death penalty, we must carry it out by any means necessary, regardless of the level of pain. I mean, that's incredible.
He almost said that, and I think Justice Sotomayor countered it quite thoroughly by saying that we're talking about drowning and drawing and quartering people, or are we talking about burning them alive? Justice Alito has made his position very clear, even from the initial dialogue between the attorneys before the decision was made, when he talked about a guerrilla war that is being fought, in his view, against the death penalty in this country. Well, of course, it's not a guerrilla war in the sense that we are American citizens. We are talking about taking advantage of our rights to speak freely and taking an issue on a social issue and a political issue. But his view is, I think, quite extraordinarily ugly in that if it is constitutional, then it requires that there be some constitutionally acceptable means to snuff out the lives of individuals who have been sentenced to death. I think the most important piece of this decision is the dissent. Certainly the dissent by Justice Breyer, joined by Justice Ginsburg, which calls into question the whole concept of the constitutionality of the death penalty, and I think that will be it is now ripe for discussion, and I think that it will be challenged significantly in the near future. But yes, what it does, what the decision does, is lay bare the kind of ugly brutality of the death system and the way in which we have sort of are expected to look the other way when we commit a homicidal act that is both inhumane and even inhumane by the constitutional standards that these justices continue to claim that they're trying to hold dear.
Right. I mean, so on the issue of the fact that Justice Breyer raised the entire constitutionality of the act itself, the legal tactic that led to this particular case was based on the method of execution amounting to cruel and unusual punishment. And in retrospect, would it have been a better approach to simply ask the question the constitutionality of the entire death penalty instead?
Well, that is, of course, under consideration in legal circles, and they're always looking for a case, excuse me, where it can go to that question. But because it has been attacked incrementally for the past number of years, ever since it was reinstated in 76, with some success, narrowing the application to avoid the use of the death penalty against children, those who committed their crimes, if they did, under the age of 18, and then against the mentally damaged, and now that even has been expanded to the mental disability concept. So there have been forays against the death penalty through the legal community for decades now, and this one came up because lethal injection was the most generally acceptable method since the gas chamber was deemed inappropriate. And it's taken some time, I think, for people to understand that the lethal injection is still murder. It's still killing a human being. And it is not, in fact, harmless or painless. And the drugs that were used to most, I think, most effectively mask the pain have now become unavailable because
the drug makers don't want their drugs to be used in this way.
Exactly.
Now, this is really interesting because even midazolam, the makers of the drug Acorn Line said it, quote, strongly objects to the use of its products in capital punishment. They're asking the state of Oklahoma to return the drug supply that it had bought for a full refund. But even if states don't actually issue refunds, eventually they will run out and need to get more. And at that point, what will happen? Where do they plan to get them? Because even though this decision affirms the use of lethal injection to kill people, the supply of these drugs is not insured.
Yes, that's quite correct. And of course, there are other drugs that are being used in other states now for what they're calling a single drug rather than a triple drug execution. So they will, they will continue to try to find ways in which to they being, you know, the Texans and the Oklahomans and the Floridians and the Missourians and those Ohioans and those who continue to want to use it. Now, and we have a threat here in California as a result of a lawsuit. The governor has indicated that as a result of the Glossop, or after the Glossop decision, he has 120 days to determine a single drug execution scenario, and that is something that is going to concern us greatly. It will be challenged on every level. It will not be immediately put into effect, but nonetheless, it is a real challenge, I think, to those of us who want to see an end to the use of the death penalty here in California and across the country.
Right. California hasn't executed anyone for at least 10 years, but Governor Jerry Brown entered into this settlement with victims' families who filed a lawsuit, and that settlement was based on the outcome of the Supreme Court ruling. And so we will start to see some legal battles and possibly a readying of executions again in Oklahoma, where the three death row inmates who challenged the lethal injection are based. Oklahoma is already moving to set execution dates for Richard Glossop, Marion Grant, and Benjamin Robert Cole. And for those three men in particular, is this the end of the road?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow the
question. For the three men in Oklahoma, yes, who for whom the state is setting execution dates because the Supreme Court has ruled now, is that the end of their process of appeal?
Well, I'm sure there will be further challenges on the parts of the attorneys defending them, whether or not those challenges will have effect because of the Glossop ruling remains in question. But Oklahoma appears to be intending to go forward with the with the midazolam, as you suggested, and that has been demonstrated to be a problematic drug in terms of inducing the deep coma-like sleep in which they will not feel any pain. However, justice, I hesitate to use the term justice in terms of Mr. Alito, but the Alito decision argues, as you suggested, that a certain amount of pain may be constitutionally tolerable. Mm. So it really, I think it reduces us as a nation to a degree that is, I think, heretofore unseen.
Now, there's also the important issue, since the court did sort of address, at least in the writings of the opinions on the death penalty as a whole, there's the issue of the fact that we have and do execute innocent people. The case of Glenn Ford is illustrative of that. He was the longest serving death row inmate, released last year after serving 30 years in Louisiana for a crime he didn't commit. And sadly, Mr. Ford died this week after just 1 year of freedom. I mean, he lost 30 years of his life. He got something like $20 compensation from the state. How many Glenn Fords are there still on death row? We'll never know. But that, there's just that doubt should you know, be enough cause for this practice to be put on hold indefinitely, right?
No, absolutely. And in fact, there are there was a release in Ohio late last year of Wiley Bridgman and his brother Kwame Ajamu, who were there for 33 years. So we wow. see this and this growing sense of the reality of the inappropriateness of the death penalty and the wrongheadedness of the prosecutorial forces. And it's become, I think, so obvious to the people in the country that we're now losing, or we are gaining, but the country is losing its willingness to support the continued use of the death penalty. And we're going to, we and the Death Penalty Focus are looking at whether or not it's feasible to put an initiative on the ballot next year to ask the people of California to simply say this must be brought to an end.
Right, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because even though the Supreme Court said it was constitutional to kill people by drugs, it didn't say that states have to have the death penalty and have to put people on death row and kill them. There are a growing number of states that have simply abolished the death penalty. Nebraska just did it this year. And so does the Supreme Court ruling, how does it sort of impact the movement going forward? Are people simply going to turn the fight against the death penalty into the state-by-state movement that has already been going on to an extent, and that you know, has the bizarre nature of the conversation around the death penalty has also led to Utah, for example, declaring that it will simply kill people by firing squad as a backup plan. So we've really
yes,
come to
course.
A very strange state of affairs.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think it's coming to the point where we are becoming the brutality of the system has become so obvious as to be discomforting to so many people. But of course, it's so sorry, caught catching my throat. It's always been a state issue primarily, although there is a federal death system, and the state organizations will continue to work. Either in our case, we work across the nation, but we also work focus in California very much, and we will continue to do the work. There is a national effort as well, the Eighth Amendment Project, which is intending to take it to the Supreme Court and convince the enough justices that it simply will not work under the constraints written in the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual. But I think the state actions have to continue, and the Nebraska effort was an extraordinary, I think, success in that it's a so-called red state, and the legislature that finally came around on the subject is primarily Republican, so it even puts to the lie to the notion that it's a liberal conservative or Republican Democrat or whatever you want to call it issue. It's really a humanitarian issue, and people need to understand it from that perspective.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for everything that you do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mike Farrell is a, of course, well-known actor, also a longtime activist, and the president of Death Penalty Focus, based in California.